Coming up on this episode of The Doctor's Pharmacy.
Anytime anybody comes in with a chronic issue that's not getting better, especially anything that's inflammatory or digestive in any way or neurologic, it's the first thing I look at.
Hey everyone, it's Dr. Mark. As a busy doctor with multiple jobs, I'm all about tools that make my life simpler. And since testing is something I rely on to help almost all my patients, I was really excited to learn about Rupa Health. Hormones, organic acids, nutrient levels, inflammatory factors, and gut bacteria are just some of the many things I look at to find the most effective path to optimal health for my patients. But that means I'm placing orders through multiple labs, which is just an overall pain. And it also makes keeping track of results more difficult for me and my patients and other doctors. Rupa Health has totally changed that. They've made functional medicine testing simpler and more convenient than ever so that practitioners like me can focus on helping their patients. With Rupa Health, functional medicine practitioners can access more than 2,000 specialty lab tests from over 20 labs like Dutch, Vibrant America, Genova, Great Plains, and more. It's 90% faster, letting you simplify the process of getting the functional tests you need and providing a noticeably better patient experience. This is really a very much needed option in the functional medicine space that I'm so excited about. You can check out a free live demo and a Q&A or create an account at rupahealth.com. That's rupahealth.com. If you've been following me for a while, you know that I often talk about how eating organ meats is so good for your health. Now, I know it can be hard to work them into your diet, but when we don't eat things like liver, kidney, and heart regularly, we're missing out on wonderful sources of essential nutrients. Organ meats are nature's multivitamins and the richest sources of natural vitamin A, B vitamins, and minerals that we have. But liver isn't everyone's first choice for a delicious meal, which is why my friends at Paleo Valley created their grass-fed organ complex supplement. Paleo Valley grass-fed organ complex contains three different organs from healthy grass-fed pasture-raised cows. So you're getting a wide array of nutrients, and each ingredient is sourced from a family-run farm in the U.S. It's then gently freeze-dried in order to preserve as many of the nutrients as possible. The end result is an odorless, tasteless, burpless supplement that offers all the benefits of organ meats in an easy-to-swallow capsule form. If you're struggling with brain fog, low energy levels, or if you just want to optimize your health and vitality, try Paleo Valley grass-fed organ complex. And right now, Paleo Valley is offering my listeners 15% off their entire first order. Just go to paleovalley.com/hymen to check out all their clean paleo products and take advantage of this deal. And now, let's get back to this week's episode of The Doctor's Pharmacy.
Hi, this is Lauren Feehan, one of the producers of The Doctor's Pharmacy podcast. Leaky gut or dysbiosis is often the root cause of many illnesses that affect the brain, the nervous system, hormones, joints, and more. Gluten is a common driver of leaky gut due to its impact on the protein zonulin, which opens tight junctions in the gut, causing leaky gut. Gluten affects many people in this way, not just people with celiac disease. In today's episode, we feature three conversations from The Doctor's Pharmacy on how gluten can create an unhealthy gut and lead to a variety of chronic health conditions. Dr. Hyman speaks with Maggie Ward on gluten and autoimmune diseases such as Hashimoto's disease, with Dr. Alicia Fasano on the role of gluten and inflammation in leaky gut, and with Dr. George Papanikolaou on how gluten and leaky gut can be a root cause for high blood pressure. Let's jump in.
I can't tell you how many symptoms I've seen get better, you know, not across the board, but just I've had brain fog get better taking gluten out. I've had joint pain get better. I've had skin get better. Mm-hmm. So, you know, people joke around, like, do you take everyone off of gluten? I'm like, if you saw how many people got better off of gluten, you take it, you know,
well,
take
yeah.
it out
I mean,
of their
we,
diet
We see
too.
People who come to see us who are ill.
Yeah, right.
Right. And so we have a select, we call selection bias. But I would say, you know, when people walk in the door with any kind of chronic illness, for me, checking gluten antibodies and what we call a Cyrex 3 test, which we'll get into, which looks at way more proteins around gluten, is like checking their blood pressure.
Yeah.
Or their temperature.
Right.
It's a vital sign for me because it's so common. It's such a big deal. And, you know, I just saw this guy the other day who had all this severe lymphedema and inflammation in his body. And he had one of the worst gluten tests I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And he didn't know it. And he's like 50 years old.
Yeah.
So anytime anybody comes in with a chronic issue that's not getting better, especially anything that's inflammatory or digestive in any way or neurologic, it's the first thing I look at.
Yeah. And I think the question I get a lot too is like, well, why was I okay eating gluten through, you know, my younger years and why is it an issue now? And I'm like, well, even with celiac, right? That's a genetic condition. You're technically born with it, but when it develops can really vary. So you need to have like the genetic predisposition gluten in your diet and some type of trigger.
Yeah.
So an infection, you know, a really stressful event, toxins again.
Yeah.
Something has compromised your gut lining and now you're reacting to these proteins. So for some people, it might not even be a life sentence. I mean, if they have celiac or something similar, they have to be really careful. But other people, sometimes if you get the gut sorted out and healed, they can tolerate
some
of these
proteins.
Yeah,
when I was really sick with mercury poisoning and when I was really sick and had gut issues, I couldn't eat any gluten. And now, I mean, I don't eat a lot, but now it doesn't really bother me and I don't really have antibodies because I fixed my gut.
Right.
And I think we see a lot of these patients who, may not have any symptoms for years and years, like you said, and then when they're 50, they get an autoimmune disease or they get something, and you check and they have celiac, they actually have celiac or they have really severe gluten sensitivity. And I think, you know, you say it's genetic, about 30%+ of the population has the gene for celiac.
Right.
But only 1% get it. And I think it's all the things you're saying. It's all these insults that are from the environment, our diet, antibiotics, et cetera, that make us susceptible.
Right. Your genes are never going to say you're going to get that disease. It's usually your environment that needs to turn those genes on. So yeah, it's true. And even though you have the genetics, it doesn't mean that it's not a way to diagnose for it, but it's good to know your genetics.
And it's a spectrum, like you look at the antibody test and there's a normal level, right? Like there's 0 to 20 or whatever on the antibody test on your blood level. But when you think about it, there is no normal level of antibodies to gluten in your blood, right? And you talk to Dr. Alessio Fasano, who's been on the podcast, who's the world's expert in gluten at Harvard and brilliant guy. And he said, look, if you have any antibodies, it means three things. One, you've been eating wheat or gluten. Two, you have a leaky gut. And three, your immune system doesn't like it.
Right.
So if the level is 5, it's not as bad as 20, but it's not as good as 0.
Right. And you don't want to go to 20, right?
So a lot of people say, oh, my tests are fine, but it's a spectrum. It's a continuum. It's not on or off.
Right.
And it's always worth doing an elimination diet because the cost is low, the benefit's high. There's really no downside to getting off it for 6 weeks, let's say, or even 2 weeks and seeing what you'd feel like. And if your symptoms get better and then you eat it again and you feel worse, there's your answer.
Right, right. I think it's a little tricky too, though, with gluten, because typically with an elimination diet, use 2 to 3 weeks off of that food, you should feel better. We've had a lot of people where it's up to 3 months.
3 months,
right?
Yes,
before
3 months.
I saw it clinically for a while, and now that we're testing for it more, you see these antibodies to gluten stay around for a long time after someone's been off of it, right? If you're no longer getting exposure, those antibodies should come down, the inflammation should come down. So that's something to keep in mind for listeners, because I've had a lot of people say, I went gluten-free for 3 weeks and I didn't feel all that much different. And then I'm like, I think you got to give it longer. It's around that 3 month mark that a lot of people my joints finally started feeling better around that point. So that's something to keep in mind.
I had a patient when she was off for 10 weeks before she started to feel better with psoriatic arthritis. Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah. And, usually it's a combination of a few other things that need to be sorted out, but you really want to give yourself a good time period. So if you've never done up to 3 months, you should. And, it sneaks in a lot of places, which we'll talk about. But, most folks who are fairly sensitive have to be 100%+ off of it. Yeah. Or they will still be reactive.
And it's 150%.
I mean,
if people have Dr. Fasano said to me once, is if you have a thumbnail full of gluten in 3 months, you're back to zero.
Yeah.
You can't even cheat a little bit if you want to do it, because your body then creates an immune response. Right. And I remember a patient who had rheumatoid arthritis and she was very, good, but, she was trying all the functional medicine stuff. She would get a little bit better. It wasn't cutting it. And I said, look, you think you're gluten free? And I went through her diet, and she was getting some, and maybe she had some soy milk with barley malt and this and that. So I said, why don't we put you on just a 10-day Ultra Clear Plus shake, which is what we were using back then, which is basically a rice protein, low allergenic, just no other food, just this shake for 10 days, see what happens. Everything went away.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, And I think I saw her 3 months later, 6 months later, and she'd completely changed. She lost 40 pounds, her arthritis was gone. She felt great.
Right.
And I think, one of the things I just want to sort of emphasize is that whatever condition you have, almost anything really in medicine, it should be on your list of things to think about.
Right.
Because when you look, for example, the New England Journal of Medicine had an article years ago, which listed over 55 different diseases that were really caused by celiac and gluten, but we're masquerading as something else.
Right.
Osteoporosis, iron deficiency, schizophrenia, autism, cancers, you name it, autoimmune diseases, migraines. I mean, just disease after disease. And if you really look at that list, and that's just, I think, a short list compared to things I've seen over the last 30 years, you're going to think that pretty much anybody who has a serious chronic illness or has chronic symptoms or is just not feeling great should check for it and also should try an elimination diet.
Right, right. And this is where, too, testing can be helpful because there's some people that think they're 100% off of it. You know, I've had several folks come in already knowing they have celiac or very sensitive and they're off of gluten. We still test them. And the antibodies that we're looking for, this is through the Cyrex 3 panel that we do. There's about 32 different immune markers that they're looking at various parts of the gluten protein and wheat and other proteins within wheat. But so it's a very sensitive test. And these antibodies shouldn't be in your system if you have not been eating gluten and they come back positive. Yeah. And that's like, okay, you're getting some hidden sources. When you eat out, are you, you know, doing all the precautions you need to do? Have you checked your body care products? Is your house gluten-free? There's so much contamination that happens in the house of, you know, not everyone in the house is gluten-free and they're sharing space and food. So this is where you have the testing can be really helpful to kind of dig in. And again, traces can make a difference, even if you don't have celiac for someone that's really sensitive.
So tell us about like some of the common things we see. One of the cases you have is a thyroid issue.
Yeah, so I wanted to kind of focus on autoimmunity because that's a lot. Anytime I see someone with an autoimmune condition, if they're not gluten-free, I'm like, that's you got to start there just to make sure that's not triggering it. Because again, even if you don't have celiac—
I want to emphasize what you said. Anybody who has an autoimmune disease, gluten should be on your list
absolutely
of what to check and what to eliminate. It is easy to do and you can have profound results.
Absolutely. Yeah, because even if you don't have the celiac, what we so often find is that when you take gluten out, these other like antibodies to the thyroid, other conditions of autoimmune conditions, they get better. The numbers start getting better. So we've seen that clinically and now we're, you know, we test for it so much more. So even if you don't have celiac, we do find it can trigger a lot of other autoimmune-like conditions. So that's, I was kind of wanting to focus on two cases around autoimmunity. The first one is a 38-year-old woman with Hashimoto's, which is the autoimmune condition you can get with your thyroid, very common and a lot of reasons to have it. But she was interesting. She was a really intense triathlete, so very competitive, high exercise person. She came with severe fatigue just in for nutrition because I think she, you know, want to focus on nutrition and weight loss, which is not typically what you see with low thyroid function. But her thyroid antibodies were extremely high, some of the highest I've ever seen. And she also had a liver enzyme that was elevated too. So I was, you know, wondering if there maybe was a toxicity component to that. And I do think she was a bit malnourished given the high level of exercise that she does. Some of her nutrition labs, like even her cholesterol was coming back low, which could indicate that she wasn't getting all the nutrition or maybe not absorbing all the nutrition she needs. So I, you know, like I always do with autoimmune, I'm like, let's take all the gluten out. She kind of did her own research and went full on paleo, which takes out all the grains and all the legumes, which sometimes really can make a difference for folks that are gluten sensitive. And I really focused, again, getting enough good fats and protein, good quality carbohydrates in her diet. With the exercise piece, you know, I was thinking there could be an adrenal component to that. And your adrenals are very closely linked to your thyroid. So she, you know, worked on some other lifestyle things and did some yoga and restorative stuff that I think was important.
But you know, when you see Hashimoto's, which is very common, right? One in five women have low thyroid. A lot of that is autoimmune thyroid conditions, probably the most common autoimmune disease in the country. You know, it's not all related to gluten, but probably I would say a third of my patients who have Hashimoto's, when I check their gluten antibodies, are elevated.
Right. It's a piece of the puzzle, right?
And when they get off gluten, they get better.
Right. Exactly. It's so often a piece of the puzzle. It's usually not the only thing, but it's definitely a big component for a lot of folks. And, you know, again, being a high-level triathlete, your digestive system takes a hit to that, you know? And I think she got a little bit of leaky gut, where before the gluten may not have been an issue. Yeah. And she'd also had a daughter soon before. And, you know, sometimes just the process of going through a pregnancy can switch what goes on with the immune system as
well. And on her blood test, she found elevated.
Yeah, so I had her, you know, she didn't do any specialty testing with us. I just had her, she had a good local doctor who did more integrative stuff. And I said, have them do a celiac panel and not just check tissue transglutaminase, which is what the kind of the gold standard, so to say, right, for blood work is for celiac. You can check for antibodies to gliadin, which is part of the gluten protein. You could check for deaminated gliadin. So I wrote out what to ask her doctor for and they ran it. And she did not have the tissue transglutaminase, which mostly is what they're going to look for celiac. But she did have anti-gliadin antibodies. And I was like, you should not have those, you know? So you may not have celiac, but you could have something similar.
So yeah, so that's a good point, because a lot of doctors will check the basic test and they say you're fine. And they only check like one antibody called TTG.
Right.
But they don't check the antigliadin antibodies, which are less specific, but actually more sensitive. So they'll they'll show up often when the other one doesn't.
Right, right.
And they do indicate a level of leaky gut, a level of gluten sensitivity, and they are definitely contributing to all sorts of issues for people.
Right. And we did some other nutritional stuff. She was low in iodine, and we did some sea vegetables and things, which is important for thyroid. So again, there's other things that are going on. But that, you know, when I had a 2-year follow-up with her, obviously we had a few follow-ups in between, but she said her digestion was great, her energy was great. Her thyroid antibodies, and you know, what I think we hear in conventional medicine is like, you got autoimmunity, you have it. You know, right. Why check antibodies? It doesn't go away. So her thyroid peroxidase, which is one of the ones they check, came down to less than zero, whatever the normal is. And her thyroglobulin antibody, which is the other one, is slightly elevated, but came down significantly.
So that's remarkable. So she had one of the highest levels of autoimmune antibodies you'd ever seen. And after getting her gut sorted and getting the gluten out of her diet and optimizing her nutritional status.
Doing stress reduction.
She actually had a complete normalization of one of them and almost normal the other one.
Right.
Which, quote, doesn't happen in traditional medicine.
And she's on Armour. She's on some thyroid support. She does feel better with it. And I think there's, you know, often a need for it. But, you know, she pretty much reversed her autoimmunity by going paleo.
That's amazing.
So that was pretty remarkable. It's nice to see when things, you know, kind of quickly turn around for
some
folks.
What about this other case you had?
So this other one was a bit more complicated. She's a young woman, 27 years old, but she has mixed connective tissue disease, which, you know, it's kind of a combination of, you know, similar to lupus or scleroderma. It's kind of a mix of where autoimmunity can affect many different tissues.
Yeah, so it's a bad autoimmune.
It is a bad one.
It affects like all the tissues and organs and skin and liver and kidneys and muscles and so.
And then she came in with all those symptoms, you know, a ton of joint pain. She had a lot of digestive stuff, which she said she kind of always had her whole life. Fatigue. She was depressed. She had weight gain, probably because she was so inflamed. She wanted to lose about 20 pounds or so. And her symptoms did start in her teens with some, you know, exercise stuff. And then by the time she came to see us, again, only just in her 20s, she was getting arthritis in her hands. So she was on autoimmune suppressant medication. She was on Celcept, but she had been on a lot of things over the years. Omeprazole for her reflux, because she had a lot of the digestion issues. She was on a low gluten diet.
Yeah, yeah, that doesn't count.
That's what I always talk to people. What is
it's like
low?
Being a little bit pregnant.
What is low gluten? I was like, you have all these conditions. You have to take gluten out. And she had done testing. I think some specialty tests that did show she was reactive to gluten and soy before, and that's why she was low. But I told her, you know, you got to be 100%. And she said, you know, I do feel like my headaches are worse and my stomach's worse when I have gluten. So. So we got her strict gluten-free, you know, I kind of low grain. I try to get it low allergen overall. I told her to come off the coffee, no alcohol, anything else that could be inflammatory to her gut.
And you also did this test, which was not the normal test. So,
right.
So you mentioned a little bit earlier. So when you go to the traditional doctor, they'll do a celiac panel. They'll do the TTG. They'll do sometimes gliadin antibodies. But we at the Ultra Wellness Center do a different test from the lab called Cyrex, which...
Right.
Looks at not just a few proteins in the wheat, but all sorts of different, like
dozens
of
the gliadins, glutenins, or different parts of the gluten protein. So they're breaking them down to these smaller units so you can really get a closer, you know, look at what the immune system's reacting to. And there's a section there of transglutaminase. So it's not the same thing as tissue transglutaminase. You can't diagnose celiac with it. But what Cyrex says is that folks that have these other transglutaminase reactions are more likely to have an autoimmune condition related to gluten. Hmm. So this is where it's like, okay, it may not be celiac, but you probably have something very similar. So out of 32 markers, 30 of them came back positive on a low gluten diet. I mean, she wasn't eating a standard American diet at all. She did have a celiac panel. Her tissue transglutaminase, again, that gold standard was borderline high, which it should not really be showing anything. And her deaminated gliadin was high. She did have the genetics. She had, it's called HLA-DQ2 and DQ8. The DQ2 was positive, which brings your risk up pretty high for celiac. We also did a Cyrex 4, which is known as kind of their autoimmune profile as well. So they're looking at dairy. Dairy we know is big allergen in and of itself, but a lot of people that react to gluten seem to react to dairy.
Yeah.
And they've, you know, with paleo, a lot of folks take out all grains, and sometimes that is helpful. According to Cyrex research, oats have been identified a long time ago. Even when they're gluten-free, when they're not contaminated with gluten, there is a protein in there very close in structure to gluten. So many people do react to it.
I see that a lot. I mean, I run the gluten-free oats and I'm like, no.
Yeah, usually
if you are still having any symptoms, then you should just get rid of all the oats.
So I tend to throw oats in the gluten category. And then they also suspect rice, which I've always thought of as a low allergen grain, but we do have a lot of folks that seem reactive to rice, corn, and millet. So those are the ones I kind of focus on. They also check corn, soy, some of these other common allergens.
Yeah, and so what happens is, you know, the way I think about it is gluten is sort of the gatekeeper, right? When you eat gluten, you become sensitive to it. It opens up the channels in the gut, creating what we call a leaky gut. And then other foods get in and you get these cross reactions. So you get other grains, you get dairy, you get soy, but it's really the gluten that sort of started the whole thing.
Right.
And if you fix the gluten and you heal the gut and you get rid of all those other foods for a short time, maybe 3 months, 6 months, maybe a year, you can heal the leaky gut and then become able to tolerate a much wider diet.
Absolutely. So I think that's a fear of so many people when they start reacting to so many things. I'm like, you know, a lot of these foods are not at fault. You know, there's something else compromising your gut. Maybe gluten.
The innocent bystander.
What's that?
Like the innocent bystander.
Yeah. And I'm like, once that gut gets healthy, you know, your immune system's not going to be seeing it and reacting as much.
Now, you've probably heard me talk about how much I love infrared saunas on the podcast. They've been linked to so many different benefits, like better muscle recovery, calming of the nervous system, improved circulation, even activation of the immune system to support protection and healing. Saunas also promote the release of feel-good endorphins for that blissed-out feeling and give your skin a healthy glow. Now, I know not everyone has room or the budget to have their own sauna at home. So I was really excited to learn about Higher Doses Infrared Therapy line. They have an infrared sauna blanket that gives you all the benefits of infrared in an easy-to-use portable blanket at a much lower cost than a standard standalone sauna. This blanket is so cool. It has a layer of amethyst to deepen the infrared benefits, a tourmaline layer to generate negative ions, and a layer of clay to balance heat, and a charcoal layer to bind pollutants as you detox. Or if you're someone who wants to experience the benefits of infrared without the sweat, check out Higher Doses Infrared PEMF Mat, which combines the dual technology of infrared with pulsed electromagnetic field therapy. It works by sending electromagnetic waves through your body at different frequencies to help promote your body's own recovery process. This mat comes in two sizes. It's built with a thick layer of 100% natural purple amethyst crystals in a mesh fabric tube across the entire mat. Whether you deal with chronic pain, work out frequently, or just need a moment to relax, lying on these mats even a couple of minutes a day will help ease your mind and body from the inside out. Right now, get your own infrared sauna blanket or infrared PEMF mat at higherdose.com today and use my exclusive promo code PHARMACY, that's PHARMACY15, at checkout to save 15% off. That's higherdose.com and the code is PHARMACY15, or just go to higherdose.com/Hyman to get your 15% off today. And now let's get back to this week's episode of The Doctor's Pharmacy.
The way I think about it is that the gluten is sort of the gatekeeper. It sort of opens the gate and creates this leaky gut. And then all these other food antigens can leak in and start to aggravate the immune system. So the body begins to start to react to other things. And I've seen this over and over the decades. Is this something you're noticing?
Yeah, I mean, again, I'm quoted all the time about this because, you know, our group was the one that discovered the molecular mechanism by which gluten can really make your intestine leak through the release of zonulin. This is a molecule that has been now,
zonulin,
that's right, linked to a variety of
chronic inflammatory. You should get the Nobel Prize for discovering that.
You know, people are still very skeptical. So, but anyhow, the bottom line is that you put two together and say, well, if gluten is capable through some of these undigestible peptides to engage in a specific receptor that instigates the cells to release zonulin and make the intestine leak, then, you know, this can be detrimental and harmful to everybody. The answer is it depends. Actually, the vast majority of people would not have consequences if you have a balanced diet. Mm-hmm. And can even be useful to help what we call antigen sampling, to bring very small amount of antigen so that the immune system will be
more robust,
trained in case that the storm will come, the real deal will come. The problem arises when you exceed the amount of gluten, for example, so that this continues all the time, Or even if you have, you know, not a huge amount of gluten that you eat, you are genetically predisposed that when you increase gut permeability on the other side of the fence, you find an immune system that is ready to fight against gluten. And these are the people, they have gluten-related disorders. So all this to say, I would not catalogize gluten as the villain of the 21st century necessarily. After all, if you and I were here, rather than jump from one tree to another, we have to thank agriculture that predicted the amount of food that we can have and free up our time to do more creative stuff.
Yeah.
By the same token, you know, to dismiss completely the fact that gluten can be an issue for, you know, a variety of individuals outside celiac disease, that would be also to not see what has become more and more obvious.
Yeah, it's pretty extraordinary to see how this whole field is opening up. And you know, one of the things we often were made fun of for decades is this idea of a leaky gut. That, you know, basically the belief was that if you had a leaky gut, you'd have, you know, sepsis and you'd die, basically, which means you have overwhelming infection. But, you know, this sort of intermediate zone of sort of slightly leaky gut leading to inflammatory diseases is seemingly connected to everything from obesity and type 2 diabetes to heart disease to autoimmune diseases, neurologic diseases, autism. I mean, it's like almost this unifying theory of how we get inflammation.
So I'm fascinated how historical memory is lost during generations. For example, you know,
amnesia.
I've called that amnesia, whatever. But, you know, when, you know, at the beginning of the 90s, we were convinced that celiac disease was a big deal in the United States. The establishment really came after us big time.
Yeah.
Said, you know, you really missed the boat here. We look for celiac disease and we didn't find it. So, you know, you are not, you know, in the right direction. And this, to put that very mildly, because the criticism were very much more harsh than that.
Yeah.
And their premise was on a state of mind that was fixed on what was at that time the definition of celiac disease. Young kids with a big belly, diarrhea.
Yeah.
And that's true. And we don't see that. We see other stuff.
And you don't have to have any digestive systems.
Well, zero. Right, you can be obese. Right. But that was not clear at that time. And that's the reason why we were highly criticized. Now in 2018, if you ask anybody, nobody will question that celiac disease is as frequent in the United States and in Europe. But if you ask, it's been always like this, the answer most likely is, yeah, of course. We always thought so. Even the ones that were hypercritical.
Right.
Same phenomenon with this leaky gut story.
Yeah.
You know, again, it's not that I was like a functional medicine doctor always tune in to this.
No.
I came to this by, you know, chance, by, again, doing this cholera vaccine and learning that cholera can make your gut leak, and then try to understand how that does and see that there is a very sophisticated machinery to loosen up to increase the impermeability of tight junction in the intestine.
And then the little connections. That
yeah, these the are these little gates in between cells that we thought that were cemented so that no things can come through.
Yeah, and then
we
learn the cells, not between the
cells.
That's
right. Everything that we negotiate with the environment, we thought it has to come through the cell. And then we learn, no, actually, there is a space in between cells that can be modulated in its permeability. And, you know, when we studied the mechanism of this toxin and we saw this very complicated machinery, the reasoning that I made there, I said, it can't be that we evolved to this machinery there just to get sick with this toxin from Vibrio cholera. Vibrio probably learned physiology from us and exploited that possibility for its own return.
Yeah.
And that's how we end up to, you know, discover zonulin. And I have to say, you know, with the story of the leaky gut are now half away compared to the story of celiac disease is over, it goes to the discussion over. I say half away because even the establishment now of evidence-based medicine, the hypercritical to our work that has been coming right here, the jugular vein, when we discovered
zonulin. You're on the right track when you're
well, you know, again, Mark, I'm an individual that not only I'm open-minded, but I am the individual that, you know, I admit that, you know, science is a constellation of failures with very few successes. Mm-hmm. And you live for those. But I also admit that science is not a perfect, you know, path. Most of the time you're wrong. And there is nothing worse as a scientist to not admit when you're wrong. Yeah. What you do is, you know,
attach their ideology.
That's and right. Because, you know, what is true today, it will be garbage in 3 years. We know that. It's that dynamic. So as a good scientist, you formulate an hypothesis. You design an experiment to challenge the hypothesis. And you perform the experiments. And then you evaluate the outcome. The 9 out of 10 times is different to what you anticipated with your formulated hypothesis. This brings to two kinds of science. The incremental science. I want to go from point A to B to C to D to get to my final destination. I know where I am. I see my sights where I'm going.
Yeah.
That's the one in which your peers will follow you, will understand what you're doing, and eventually will accept, you know, the approach that you're taking, because, you know, everything is clear. Sometimes you want to go from point A to point B and you end up to point Z. So in a place where nobody's been before.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the time it's dead end. So it's something that leads to nothing. Very few times you got in what we call transformational science. That is not something that you intend, but you end up to be in something that changed completely the paradigm or way of thinking.
The unintended consequences of your
work. And that's what the Zone of Discovery was all about.
Yeah.
When you got there to understand if you are in a dead hand or you do something transformational, the only thing that you need to do is to sit and see if your peers can validate and reproduce what you've done, or this was not reproducible. The Zone story now is highly reproduced. As a matter of fact, I don't, you know, alter the vast majority of what is the science in Zone nowadays. We contribute a minuscule component of the hundreds of papers that are out there. All this to say that not only the Zone story, but the story of the modulation of gut permeability with the identification of genes that can modulate tight junctions, the identification that, you know, loss of barrier function is the core of many chronic inflammatory diseases. Yeah. People are coming around.
It is so powerful, yet a discipline. Medicine is not really thought about. How do we then address that? How do we fix a leaky gut? How do we normalize the function in there? What do we do to fix that problem?
Well, we can't, because we don't know yet, you know, what are the mechanisms that leads to that, because this is a very complex machinery with very sophisticated functions. And I was mentioned during the lecture that the structure of this tight junctions is extremely redundant. That means it's a function that's dear to us. Because where the redundancy means that, you know, you have backups.
You have a lot of backup systems to make sure
in
you
case
don't get
something
a leaky
goes
gut.
Wrong.
Right, right.
I can tell you with great level of confidence that the two key elements that makes your intestine leak is, one, gluten, as we said, because it releases zonin through this mechanism, and an unbalanced microbiome, what we call dysbiosis. That can be either because the function and the composition is imbalanced, or because the microbiome is established in the place where it's not supposed to be. Small intestine bacterial growth, SIBO, is one of the most powerful way to release zonin and make the intestine
And we
leak.
See this all the time. People have I call it the food baby. They get bloating after eating and distended, and that often means that there's bacteria in there producing gas.
That's right. So I think that, you know, it's going to take another few years for people to accept completely this idea of the importance of the intestinal barrier in a variety of chronic inflammatory diseases. So the hard, you know, soul of immunologists, traditional immunologists, will never come around this. They will never come around to the idea that autoimmune diseases can be treated, as I believe that they can, because if you stop
by fixing the gut,
of course, you know,
which is how we do it in functional medicine, without even knowing what we're doing.
These conditions, including autoimmune disease, are based on five pillars: the genetics, so who you are, your environment. Including what you eat, an increased gut permeability, an immune system that becomes hyperbelligerent, and a microbiome that is not doing what it's supposed to, because epigenetically we make your genes to be, you know, either expressed or repressed, so that you switch from genetic predisposition to clinical actuality. And when I say chronic inflammation, I mean anything.
Yeah.
You know, cardiological issues,
Even arthritis, finding microbiome, but
anything.
Osteoarthritis, which I think is fascinating.
Any of these five pillars are fair targets to try to ameliorate inflammation. Again, genetic editing, I don't think that's a possibility because the complexity is way too much. If there are too many genes involved, I don't think that's going to happen. Modulate the environment. That's something that we should really focus on.
We have to deal with all those pillars.
Absolutely.
And then in medicine, we just try to find the one drug to fix the one thing.
No. It's not going to work that way.
Yeah.
So if you will continue to have an environment that is really conducive of inflammation, food, pollution, chemicals, you can fix whatever you want in terms of immunosuppressors or, change the microbiome. Everything will go back where it's supposed to be.
Right.
But if you start to think, more, I would not say holistic, but comprehensive. I say, let's start with a lifestyle. What really is a common sense? Of course, we can't go back and live in a cave. That's not feasible. But can we, avoid some chemicals that can instigate inflammation? Can we eventually, decide to feed our kids food and not the junk that we feed so that eventually they have the same chance that we had? Can we promote local production of produce rather than massive production that, of course, comes with the price?
Yeah.
That's changing
our agricultural system, our food processing and
absolutely.
Production system. It's all of that.
And again, it's an uphill battle because you go against major interests, of course. Mm-hmm. But if you do that, then you can tackle, how can I fix a leaky gut? Mm-hmm. What is the problem? Is the dysbiosis? Can I then use prebiotics, postbiotics, probiotics, symbiotics, whatever whatever it is.
Yeah.
And then that got also to the point of dysbiosis because, again, these factors,
they
all interacted.
Well, you said something very powerful in your talk, which is that the single biggest thing we can do to change our microbiome is change the food we eat and the quality of the food we eat and get off the processed food and eat more plant-rich foods and good quality foods, right?
If you think about these five pillars that I just told you, they highly interact. So if you affect foods, you affect the composition microbiome. If you put the microbiome back in balance where it's supposed to be based on our evolutionary plans, the immune system will defend us rather than be belligerent against us and will unleash inflammation only when it's definitely needed. Hmm. If you have a balanced microbiome, you also will have a gut permeability that will go back the way they're supposed to be. And a good gut permeability will make the immune system to be less belligerent. So it's all interconnected.
It's all connected.
Here.
There's a connection between the gut and the blood pressure.
So tell us about this patient you had who you treated.
I'm glad because it's a perfect segue because he had gut issues. And that sort of is what really was leading to his high blood pressure. So here's the gentleman that came in.
Because gut issues leads to inflammation.
It leads to inflammation. And it's not just inflammation in the blood vessels, it's inflammation in the gut lining. So you can get this non-specific lymphocytic infiltration. It's basically inflammation that
means a lot of white blood cells show up in the gut and makes it inflamed.
Exactly. So, and so what happens though is then you get a malabsorption of minerals and nutrients. That's when you don't absorb vitamin D. That's when you don't absorb potassium. That's when you don't absorb your calcium. That's when you don't absorb your magnesium. And those are the things that can help regulate blood pressure. So with this particular patient that came in, he was a 52-year-old gentleman and he had been diagnosed with high blood pressure about almost a year prior to coming. And they had tried multiple blood pressure medications, and he had different side effects, which is one of the issues with blood pressure medicines.
Oh, yeah, there's that. We forgot to talk about it.
Exactly. So, that's a big problem. Lots of people have side effects. They get dizzy. They get tired. They get erectile dysfunction. They get lower libido. They've been hair loss associated with their high blood pressure medicine. So he had been put on different medications that resulted in loss of libido, fatigue, brain fog. One of the medications actually caused dehydration that resulted in him being in the emergency room where they found his potassium to be really, really low and it had to be replaced. So he was like, I'm coming here because I want a different approach to my blood pressure. So as we were, we go through our new patient packet that's very long, some things that started to stick out were that he was, he did have fatigue and he also had irritable bowel syndrome. And I asked him to explain that to me. And when I hear irritable bowel, I don't hear this, like, again, we talk about, like...
It's just a syndrome.
Yeah, like essential hypertension. We essentially don't know what's causing it. It's like we say irritable bowel. It's like, you know what? Your diarrhea is irritating me. I don't want to talk about it, right? We don't want to get to the bottom line.
Well, it's not even that. Yeah, they don't know. Yeah, it's like, yeah. In other words, when we say people have irritable bowel, like, oh, the reason you have bloating and gas and diarrhea and constipation is because you have irritable bowel syndrome.
Right.
No. That's just the name we give to people who have those symptoms. It doesn't tell you about the cause. And that is what's unique about functional medicine, is we have a methodology, an operating system to navigate to the root cause. And we treat that, and we don't have to treat the hypertension. We treat the cause, and the disease goes away as a side effect.
Right, and so in this particular case, we do testing for the gut microbiome, and we can also do testing that tells us some things about the gut. So we can find out if there is inflammation in that endothelial lining, and that's basically, if you look down a really big stainless steel tube, and it's really shiny, imagine that shiny layer is basically a very thin membrane that protects the rest of the tube from anything that's going in the tube. So that's the endothelial lining, that very shiny stainless
steel membrane. Basically like a one-cell layer between you and the sewer, right?
You got it.
Your
exactly.
Immune system, and they'll poop inside of you.
That's a great way to put it. So, so when that membrane gets inflamed, it cannot function to absorb nutrients the way it should. And that can lead to all of the things I just spoke about earlier in regards to low magnesium, low vitamin D, low calcium. And so we know that people who have irritable bowel, there's a good percentage of them have non-celiac gluten sensitivity. And so that triggered my thinking. And that's why I ordered that test that will look at whether you have leaky gut, whether you have gluten sensitivity, and whether you have crossover to other foods like gluten that can create gluten-like impact on the gut. And so with this particular gentleman, I also did a whole host of metabolic tests that included, you know, a glucose tolerance test. I also looked at his magnesium levels. I looked at inflammatory markers.
Omega-3 fats
that we look at. So I did a comprehensive metabolic evaluation. I looked at a very expansive profile that looks at macronutrients, micronutrients, organic acids, amino acids, that gives us a really good, clear picture of what his nutritional status is, whether his the very important energy-making systems in his body are actually working the way they should, are they getting the nutrients that they need, are they being blocked from doing their work by toxins. We do this panel that gives us all that information.
And this is a very unusual panel in traditional medicine, but we're looking not for disease, we're looking for imbalances or dysfunction that we can correct that will help the body do what it's supposed to do.
Exactly. So I gather all that information with the lab test, but the most interesting thing about this gentleman is that he had one gene positive. It's a gene that would express for celiac disease. But the tests that we do to see if he actually had celiac disease were negative. And what we know about people who have at least one or both of the celiac genes that do not have active celiac disease is they're more likely to be sensitive to gluten. And indeed, he was. He had two things going on that panel that we do to evaluate inflammation and antibody interaction or the immune system creating antibodies against gluten in the body. So he did have leaky gut, meaning that endothelial lining, that one thing saving you from the poop in the center of your intestine from the rest of your body was leaking. And so the immune system was creating antibodies. So we knew there was inflammation. And the second thing was he had enormous numbers that showed that he was sensitive to gluten. And so that gluten sensitivity...
And it's not celiac, because people understand that there's celiac, right. And most traditional medicine is like, you either have celiac or you're
nothing.
Fine.
Right.
But now there's an increasing body of research, particularly by Dr. Alessio Fasano from Harvard, that shows that a lot of people have non-celiac gluten sensitivity, which you can tell through antibody testing a little bit, but it's a milder case, but it still causes leaky gut, inflammation, and many, many problems. And then there's a whole other category, which you can't measure on lab tests, called the innate immune system response or cell-mediated response to gluten, which means you can't measure it because it's just a generalized irritation of your immune system.
Yeah.
So that can be a case, even if these other things are normal. So gluten is often driving leaky gut.
And it's often overlooked.
Yeah.
Very overlooked, and particularly in a case like this. So,
and the normal doctor will check your levels, and if they're normal, quote normal, like it's 0 to 20, yeah. right? Is 19 the same as 1?
No, no, not at all.
Is 5 the same as 0? No. So I think we have to understand that if there's any level of antibody, it means there's some irritation of your immune system that's causing potential symptoms.
Yeah. So in his particular case, I put him on a gluten-free diet. And I also, honestly, I didn't put him on a gluten-free diet. I identified the gluten sensitivity. And here at the Ultra Wellness Center, we have amazing nutritionists. And when I discuss these types of cases, then they develop a program for a patient that is going to be customized to what their needs are. So in this particular case, he was on a Mediterranean diet that was gluten-free, and that made all the difference. And when he tried to reintroduce gluten back into his diet, his blood pressure went back up.
Yeah.
So it was driving the inflammation that was driving his blood pressure. And he was also low in vitamin D, which was impacted by his gluten, because gluten will keep you from absorbing iron and magnesium and potassium and calcium, and it can have impacts on lowering vitamin D.
And vitamin D regulates inflammation too. Interactive and dynamic biology where everything is connected, and that's really what we do in functional medicine.
And there's a lot of observational studies that show that vitamin D in people that have low vitamin D and you replace it, you can lower their blood pressure, particularly in people over 50. So I replaced his vitamin D, put him on a gluten-free diet, and gave him things that we know that work. He wasn't eating a lot of fish, so we gave him omega-3s. I also added in some CoQ10 and magnesium.
Yeah.
And he did phenomenally well. He never went back. Well, I shouldn't say never. He's been my patient for about 8 months now, but his blood pressures have been normal.
I hope you enjoyed today's episode. One of the best ways you can support this podcast is by leaving us a rating and review below. Until next time, thanks for tuning in.
Hey, everybody, it's Dr. Hyman. Thanks for tuning into The Doctor's Pharmacy. I hope you're loving this podcast. It's one of my favorite things to do, and introducing you all the experts that I know and I love and that I've learned so much from. And I want to tell you about something else I'm doing, which is called Mark's Picks. It's my weekly newsletter, and in it, I share my favorite stuff, from foods to supplements to gadgets to tools to enhance your health. It's all the cool stuff that I use and that my team uses to optimize and enhance our health. And I'd love you to sign up for the weekly newsletter. I'll only send it to you once a week on Fridays. Nothing else, I promise. And all you have to do is go to drhyman.com/picks to sign up. That's drhyman.com/picks, P-I-C-K-S, and sign up for the newsletter. And I'll share with you my favorite stuff that I use to enhance my health and get healthier and better and live younger longer.
Just a reminder that this podcast is for educational purposes only. This podcast is not a substitute for professional care by a doctor or other qualified medical professional. This podcast is provided on the understanding that it does not constitute medical or other professional advice or services. If you're looking for help in your journey, seek out a qualified medical practitioner. If you're looking for a functional medicine practitioner, you can visit ifm.org and search their Find a Practitioner database. It's important that you have someone in your corner who's trained, who's a licensed healthcare practitioner, and can help you make changes, especially when it comes to your health.